because if you think about it, Jim, how hard is it for the Teamsters to train people to be the best truck drivers around?
Well, we just need the chance to, and it's such a wonderful idea. It's the epitome of getting out in front of it. If we are out there, and we already know what employers want, what employers need, most of us have already put in 20, 25 years, 30, 35 years in our own businesses we come from. So we already know through trial and error what to do. So if we can take any individual, any worker, male or female, doesn't matter, and actually at any age, and train them, especially up here in Michigan, ice and snow, even if we have it all summer long, we can help the process. We can really, really help.
Yeah, in addition to that, because you're in Michigan, you've got the best potholes in the country.
Oh, they're beauties.
Yeah, thank the governor.
We put plants in there. Plants on them with Rick Snyder signs on them. Thanks, Governor.
Thanks, Rick. Yeah, we appreciate that. You know, Jim, it's a wonderful idea, and the more we do that, the better off we are, because we're
I agree.
The unions are putting the cream of the crop out there to get the job done.
Yep. You know, stay ahead of the curve and make things better for everyone, especially the employer and us.
And
it works for everybody.
And Jim, if I'm interested in getting involved in a program like that, how do I get a hold of you?
Call 1-800-626-6211. Ask for Jim Chase. I'll point you in the right direction unless we can help you right here.
Yeah, absolutely. Or if I want to join a union, 800-626-6211. Teamsters Local 406. Jim Chase, we appreciate it, brother. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Give me a call, everybody.
Absolutely. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be the sponsor of the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 2nd through the 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Blues Festival includes cruises like the Blue Bayou Cruise, the Rock the Boat Dance Cruise, Drifting Blues Cruise, and the Sail on Sister Cruise, as well as after-hour performances featuring Galactic, Charmaine Neville, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and the Paladins. Again, that's the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, Thursday, July 2nd through Sunday, July 5th at the Waterfront Park in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.fm/Waterfront Blues Festival 2015.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Welcome, dear listeners. We are Preference, a queer experiment in radio. This is our first broadcast here on KBOO. We are the latest iteration of queer programming here on KBOO going back decades. We thank everyone who was involved at Out Loud Radio for the last 13 years, making so many great conversations possible. I want to give a shout out to Boston there in the control booth, making sure we're on the air, as well as to all of KBOO's many volunteers and the members, you folks who make KBOO possible. Thanks so much to you. So we are Preference. I'm Alan Silver, your host for tonight. Right now we've got Adrian Cabouette with us. Welcome, Adrian.
Hey, so happy to be here.
Good, good, good. We're going to be talking about queer and trans folks of color and movement building tonight. So I'm excited. It's a great place for us to get started here on Preference. So let's start with you, Adrian. What do you do here in the big city?
Hi, everyone. My name is Adrian. I organize with a group called Black Lives Matter Portland. We're part of the larger national Black Lives Matter movement, organizing for Black lives, Black liberation, freedom from police brutality and from police murder and state murder all over the United States. And I also organize with the All African People's Revolutionary Party.
All African Revolution Party.
All African People's Revolutionary Party.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit about that.
The All African People's Revolutionary Party is a pan-African socialist organization. We're organizing for a free and liberated Africa and a liberated pan-African diaspora. We basically believe that if you are of African descent, no matter where you are in the world, whether you're in the United States or Haiti or on the continent itself, that you are African, that we all come from the same continent and that we all belong together on a liberated Africa.
And what is the party work towards?
We work towards a liberated Africa united under scientific socialism. Basically, we believe that capitalism exploits people inherently. Like, within a capitalist system, there always has to be someone on the bottom, someone who is, like, laboring intensely in the system and does not see any of the profit of it. And we believe that people should own the resources of their own land. They have the right to their own land, including the indigenous people of the United States, and that they should have the right to self-determination.
So scientific socialism, this is a term I think I've never had well defined for me. So it might be useful for folks to hear what it is that the party means by that.
Yeah. As I said, just owning the rights of your own production, owning the right to the resources of your own land, the right to determine how your land is governed and how your community protects itself.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk Black Lives Matter. Let's talk about Black Lives Matter Portland.
Okay.
What are folks experiencing here?
In Portland, I guess the experience in Portland is very, very different depending on whether you are white or privileged population or black. If you're black, it's kind of this weird mix of invisibility from the larger culture. Kind of like you don't see us in a lot of places. We're pushed out from neighborhoods that have been historically ours to like the far, far east of the city. But when it comes to the police, there's like this hypervisibility. Like, we are constantly profiled mm-hmm. and harassed on a regular basis. There are, like, pretty constant instances of brutality and misconduct, and there's, like, no real recourse when that happens to us. There are, like, bodies that exist, like the IPR, the Independent Police Review, where you can ostensibly submit a complaint and get, like, some kind of investigation, but it's completely controlled by the police.
Sure.
And so complaints just kind of stall right in the beginning, and you also get no representation. So basically, you're just kind of powerless before the system that's stacked against you in every possible way.
Now, I think there's probably some sentiment among folks that, to put it bluntly, as long as the police aren't murdering, then things are sort of okay.
Nah.
But we still see the police doing things like put a sixth grader in handcuffs. Or attack Tiger Roll in North Portland, and then essentially blame him for attacking them, and that's a case that's with IPR and has been for 8 months. We don't seem to be any closer to actually hearing what it is that the IPR believes transpired between the police and this 16-year-old black teenager.
Yes, and it's interesting. This case is particularly egregious because a judge said that they acted with misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what else needs to happen at that point?
Yeah.
How is it possible that those police are still in the force?
Well, the police, I've actually, I've asked the police this point, and they say that, they're waiting patiently for IPR to weigh in. That was a conversation I had just last week with North Precinct staff. So things may look different, but it doesn't mean that they are.
Yeah. It's very true. There's also, like, there are so many cases of police murder in the city that people don't even know about. Like, kind of the response that we get a lot of times when we organize here and we have protests here is, like, it doesn't really happen here. Like, this isn't Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't, like, Cleveland. This isn't Boston. But there's Keaton Otis.
Just marked 5 years.
Yeah, he has his 5-year anniversary mm-hmm. was May of this year. 5 years since the police killed him in broad daylight. on the street. They profiled him as a gangster. They said he was wearing a hoodie and he looked kind of like a gangster. He just minded his business driving down the street. Pulled him over. Within 3 minutes, he had been tased by 3 different tasers. Shot, I think, 30 times? And he was dead for no reason. Absolutely no reason. And they said that he shot a police officer. They could never connect a gun to him. They never even tried to connect a gun to him. They never they just said, this gun was his. He pulled it from a bag. He shot us after we tased him. Mm-hmm. But they didn't test it for his fingerprints. They never found residue of his fingers. They never even tried to connect it to him. They just said it was his and said he was in a gang, although he had no record whatsoever. No criminal history and no history with gangs whatsoever.
So what is Black Lives Matter looking to do here in Portland?
We want justice for Keaton Otis. We want the governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, to authorize the attorney general to conduct independent investigation into the murder of Keaton Otis, mm-hmm. and into the murder of Kendra James, another victim of police murder.
Mm-hmm. Would the federal Department of Justice, it seems like they seem to be stepping up.
They came into the city once before with that original settlement, mm-hmm. and ignored the issue of race completely.
Yeah, they ended up focusing on
mental health.
And even that seems to be, if there's progress, it's not measurable.
The police just killed a mentally ill person about a month ago in Southeast Portland. And there's nothing, you would think after the Department of Justice was you've messed this up. You have to follow these rules. There would be some change, something that would prevent that from happening. Or have something different happen after they killed someone. But it's the same story. Suicide by cop. Mm-hmm.
And Black Lives Matter nationally, what's the scope there? I imagine it's fairly limitless, but where do you see the focus being specifically on policing?
No, it's expanding mm-hmm. because the violence that Black people suffer at the hands of the state is not limited to just the police brutality. It's at every level, whether it comes to housing, education, or education in this country is tied to property taxes, right? Mm-hmm. So if you live in a city where houses don't have a lot of value, cities where cities have pulled resources and are basically just abandoning Black folks in slums, the schools there are going to be terrible. But the quality of the school depends on the taxes they pay. It just doesn't, it's not fair. It's set up to be unequal. And at every level of society, in every institution, the systemic racism is built into the structure of it. And affects us at every level. So we want to expand the conversation about state violence against Black people to include all the ways in which we are attacked by the state.
I want to move in a few directions. I'm going to see if I can tie them together in a way that makes any sense at all. But I've lived in inner North Northeast Portland for almost all of my adult life. And I think about and view gentrification as a kind of violence. And I think, I think in some ways the state in a racist way believes that it benefits from gentrification in terms of reducing the ability of Black people to organize. They're no longer in a settled geographic community. And it's harder once folks are dispersed. Obviously, it becomes harder to achieve a particular level of political power. And so I feel like gentrification is sort of the next step of disempowerment. And the government has the opportunity to say, well, the market's doing this. It's not our fault. And also benefits. Power continues to be concentrated in the ways that it was before gentrification. What do you think of that?
I think that's very true. I think even if you look at the way in which the spots in which we organize, the Black Panther Party headquarters in the city, or any actually Black business, Alberta used to be just all Black organizations and Black businesses, and our existence has been erased. You can't even tell where the Black Panther Party headquarters was. And I think that's very, very intentional. Mm-hmm. We got pushed out of the city, and all the traces of us got pushed out of the city.
Mm-hmm. And it also it reminds me of something that I saw today and was thinking about a bit when I was at work. I didn't feel well, so I ate a lot of candy, and then I felt crummy in a different way. So I just sort of figured I would spend some time with myself and my thoughts. And so Seattle announced that they are painting rainbow stripes on the sidewalk up on Capitol Hill. And this is something I think most notably has been done in Chicago. And when I think of Capitol Hill, I think, yeah, I mean, it's funky-ish. And have you spent time up there? So it used to be funkier-ish, used to be more queer, I think. And it's been gentrifying in sort of in all levels. It's fairly compact areas. There's not like a lot of room, so it's building up. And there's a college down there, which I think helps sort of mediate that a little bit. It's sort of not as rambunctious as it could be. But I think there's a sense in which Capitol Hill is now a historically queer district and not an actually queer district. Even I'm saying that from, you know, conversations I've had with people who live there. And so I feel like these rainbow markers are, you know, it's about it's symbolism only. You know, there's nothing about real concerns about the community. And in fact, the Seattle police have started this safe spaces program just a month ago, maybe 6 weeks, where they coordinate with businesses to designate them as safe spaces. You can, if you're queer, specifically queer, you can go in and you know, you'll be protected from whatever's happening on the street, and they'll call the police for you, I think is the idea. And for a lot of folks, that's not necessarily the best the best solution. Welcome.
Hi.
Is your mic on?
I don't know if it's on.
I think let's try this one.
Okay.
Anyway, Adrian, do you want to?
Yeah, I think that's probably protection for a certain people, but definitely not for people of color or black folks. I don't know that calling the police in that situation would be safe. I guess I think that solutions that are community-based and that are kind of based on healing instead of like involving violence in a situation, a potential for violence in a situation, because that's what police are. Like, no matter when police enter a situation, that is like an inherent threat of violence.
Simone is here. Welcome.
Hi.
Simone Stevens, thank you for joining us here on Preference, an experiment in queer radio. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. My name is Simone Steffens. My pronouns are she and her. I am a black queer femme organizer here in Portland. I work with Adrian and Black Lives Matter. And in regards to that question, I'm about police abolishment, so I'm definitely not about spaces in which the police are going to be your go-to as security. That's always going to push out people of color. You know, we don't exactly have the best history with police, and police are historically not kind to queer people nor homeless people. So I don't think that combination would create safe space.
We'll come back to that point in a moment. I want to touch briefly on the connection between Northeast Portland, as it was and as it is, and these rainbow markers, which clearly irked me today. Because now we can see the city historicizing Black Portland in Northeast to whatever ends. And have you been down to the Gateway markers?
Yes.
I think there's nothing. Not nothing, but it's hard to. I mean, people spent years developing those historical markers, which are largely about Black history in our Northeast Portland, and they're buried where you really have to go, really have to want to go out of your way to see them. You can't see them driving. And nobody walks. I mean, not nobody. Very few people walk where they are, where you can see them at all. So it's it was both a waste and an insult. And I also don't think that the government should be in charge of designating what's historical or promoting it. That feels inauthentic and vacuous. And also, you know, once you put these things on markers, they become the story. And a lot gets lost there. And I also think that there's a which I think must be part of my main point here. There's a lot of I think the city has explicitly said that North and Northeast Portland can be a tourist attraction as this historically black community. And they said that as recently as the Trader Joe's stuff. And they really opened that. That was their, you know, their aim with this. And I think these rainbow markers crossing the street in Seattle will do the same thing. They're simply a way to make people into symbols for the sake of commerce. Anyway, do you have thoughts on that, either Simone or Adrian? I mean, any piece of what I was throwing out there.
I just think it's weird to memorialize the people that are still alive. Like, you intentionally pushed us out and you murdered us, and then you're like, oh, this is where they used to be. Like, that's kind of messed up, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, if anything, it's like a consolation prize. It's like, oh, we pushed you out, I'm sorry, but look, we're going to remember that you were here first. Like, what does that help at all? It does nothing. In fact, it kind of like is like someone spitting in your face a little bit. I mean, it's salt in the wound.
Yeah. And they're still actively pushing us out is the thing. Like, it's not like they stopped.
Right.
It's a constant process. It's so disingenuous.
And it's not like this is hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and through some natural disaster, people left that land or whatever. Like, it's like, no, you and your capitalist ventures are pushing us out of these neighborhoods for your own greedy gain. So thanks for the marker, but no thanks, buddy.
Let's touch on queerness. Simone, you identified yourself as queer.
Yes.
Something we've asked folks for the past few months, I think, in this time slot under Out Loud, is what folks mean when they say queer. There's no right answer. There's no wrong answer. What is it that you mean? Wait, I didn't prep you for that question.
No, you didn't prep me for that question at all. Well, queer is the term that I enjoy most to describe the fact that I don't base my relationships on any one specific gender identity of my partner. And so I wouldn't say that I was a lesbian, and I wouldn't say that I was bisexual, because that would imply that gender is binary, and it's not. So queer to me is a more encompassing term, and I just like that word. Right?
That was a perfect answer. I accept that answer also. I also identify as queer, and that's perfect. Like, yeah, like, it's not based on gender at all. Mm-hmm. It's just based on the person. Yeah. It could be anyone.
Right, however they identify. Don't put people in boxes. Yay!
So let's talk a bit about a bit more about what Black Lives Matters is working on here in Portland.
Sure.
We have, as I talked about earlier, Justin Fakit notice. We want an independent investigation. We want that case reopened because he was murdered by the Portland police. We want an independent investigation into the murder of Kendra James by the Portland police. Yes. And we also opened up a community center in Northeast Portland. It's the old, well, it is still, in other words, mm-hmm. we kind of took it over. And now we want to do programs for the community around it. We want direct service programs like childcare. We want a community garden. We want kind of some kind of space for radical moms of color to organize and to just like be themselves, because those spaces don't really exist. And we want to basically just make it a hub for the community and for radical organizing. And then, as Simone said, we want police abolishment. Mm-hmm. And you want prison abolishment.
And prison abolishment.
And that's what we're organizing for.
And black female visibility, especially as it pertains to Black Lives Matters, because black trans women have the highest rate of deaths in police custody and at the hands of police, and we all know that.
Yes.
And their murders normally at the hands of anyone go 100% underreported. So.
And they're misgendered and
often
subjected to indignities after death.
Often.
No respect after death.
Let's talk a bit about police abolishment. I don't think that there's, obviously there's not going to be one right answer about how to achieve that, but what do you think the next steps are?
I think we need to talk about demilitarizing the police, mm-hmm. disarming the police, and then changing them so radically that they're not even, they don't exist as a structure that is anymore. We want communities to decide how to protect themselves.
Exactly. So while we are demilitarizing police, we're looking into other options for community protection, such as watch programs and what is it?
Community healing circles.
Yes, community healing circles.
Ways to like train people in how to resolve conflicts without having to resort to involving police or structures of violence. Ways to like connect to each other and talk to each other when we do wrong things, and like bring each other in and teach each other how to treat each other better instead of discarding people.
And that's our history. I mean, that's a history as black people, and honestly as poor people. The police started off as slave catchers, so it wasn't like we were ever really historically in a rush to call them in the first place. And many communities were able to resolve their problems through councils of elders and, you know, various options, and they worked for a long time. And, you know, as poverty increases and the threat of violence and police violence increases, it's not as easy to turn to those options. So we'd like to get back to that. Actually, once you remove the threat, you know, that alleviates a lot of fear.
I think this is another place where displacement makes that kind of work more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It becomes harder to know your neighbors when both you and they are on the move. Related to that, you know, it feels like there's all these folks pouring into Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's no longer, you know, it's no longer 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds seeking, you know, some are cheap and kind of low-key exciting. But it seems to be folks who have more money.
Mm-hmm.
They have more resources. They're not only looking for sort of that sense of fun, but they're also looking to own a piece of Portland, which I think is a little bit different. I think what I am interested in is those folks are going to, you know, culturally, socially, those folks are going to take up a lot of space.
They already do.
Yeah. How do you get in there and tell your story when we could shorthand say is that, you know, white privileged Portland continues to expand and sink, you know, even deeper roots.
Tell our story to who?
Well,
to them?
To the city in general, to say, you know, if you're going to pursue police abolition, if you're going to...
You're very, very loud about it. You're very loud and in their faces about it. But we really do have a different audience. It's mm-hmm. less of, like, we're not reformist, so it's less about getting them to change their minds and what they're doing, and more about how to empower black and brown folks.
Yep.
And how to take back what's theirs through radical actions and community action and involvement and education and alternatives. We're all about alternatives. There's really nothing very mainstream.
I want the people that are directly affected by these issues mm-hmm. to organize around them, to decide for themselves how to make their lives better, because they have the power to do that. Mm-hmm. And there's more of us ultimately than there are the people oppressing us.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's why they kept us so uneducated for so long, and that's why your mainstream media lies to you.
But yeah, that's why we believe in like community spaces, like in other words, what we're trying to do in that space, like places where we can come together, where we can talk, where we can share experiences, where we can learn together, and where we can organize together.
And where you can feel safe to do those things.
Yes.
Places that are inclusive, places where you won't be subjected to transphobia and misogyny and racism, and you feel safe enough to breathe and say what you think and feel. you know, without maybe allies speaking too loudly.
Yes. And one thing that's pretty awesome about the space that we organize in within Black Lives Matter Portland is that it's all queer, femme or gender variant. It's just like a very open space, a very healing space, mm-hmm. and where we share like a lot of like these intersection oppressions. It's not like an ally space. It's like an accomplice space.
Yes.
Because we're all trying to get free. Like, we understand that the liberation of Black people is tied to the liberation of everyone else. Trans people, like women, gay men, like everyone. We're connecting struggles.
Absolutely. And anti-Black racism is at the root of our capitalist society.
Absolutely. This entire capitalist system was built on our backs.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
We're going to pause right there and hear a little bit of music chosen for us by DJ Action Slacks, the Stovall Sisters. We'll be back shortly here on Preference Queer Radio on KBOO. Welcome back to Preference, an experiment in queer radio here on KBOO. We are on the web, kboo.fm. You can go in there and listen to archived programs across the spectrum of KBOO's programming. You can also make donation for KBOO's community radio, or you can become a member. So check out the website. We are Preference. I'm Alan, and I'm your host. I'll be here next week as well. with Preference. We'll be talking with Benjamin Garrett about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and HIV, particular medication. TPP is moving forward, and we should get educated and figure out what to do about it. We're back with Simone Steffens and Adrian Cabouet. Thanks for being here with us. We're talking about queer and trans people of color engaging in movement building. Mm-hmm. So thanks for joining us for this conversation, making it possible.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much for having us.
Absolutely. So we were talking about creating this space, a physical space, in other words, for Black Lives Matters, to do work out of, and then, you know, sort of the conceptual, less physical space of, you know, a safe space. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of making trans inclusion, making safe spaces not optional, just kind of setting the tone from the outset, making a safe space for them, being intentional about including them in your leadership, elevating their narratives. That was one thing. I attended a retreat in Detroit for Black Lives Matter, for the national movement, and the one thing that was driven home from the very beginning is that transphobia is not accepted in that space, that we are fighting for all Black lives.
Yes.
Black queer people, Black trans people, Black poor people, Black rich, like all Black lives. And so, yeah, it's just kind of, it's kind of about just making it not optional not to include them.
What are some of the sort of tangible ways that you can do that, that you can promote trans inclusion?
Elevating their leadership, elevating their stories, letting them tell their own stories, and letting them decide how to organize for their own liberation, not speaking for them. Kind of the rules for any ally.
Yeah. And I mean, and when inviting them into spaces, being very intentional and letting all people that are gathered in that space know what is accepted of them and letting them know that it's not optional.
And also not tolerating unsafe behavior or unsafe language towards them.
Yes, or unsafe language towards them.
And not just for points, doing it even when they're not there. Like, if someone misgenders a trans person in your presence, you have to correct that. You have to interrupt microaggressions toward them when you witness them.
So let's talk about allies or accomplices.
Accomplices.
Or, you know, a mix of both, depending. What does that look like? What does it feel like? What's good about it, and I think also, what doesn't work so well, or what hasn't worked well? That's a lot. I can see.
That's a very loaded question.
Feel free to pick any part of it. You can concentrate on that without.
What can be good about having accomplices? White privilege is real, and there are spaces that are unsafe for Black folks to be in, and by and large, it is not our job to educate white folks to decolonize white folks. Our job is to make sure that other Black and brown folks are being decolonized and taken care of and aided in their decompression. So having white folks to talk to other white folks about how to use their white privilege for to combat anti-Blackness and anti-Black racism is, I suppose, a good thing.
Yeah, and I definitely think one of the common issues we run into is the whole white savior complex. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the history that we learn about the civil rights movement, about the Black liberation movement, is this idea that, like, there are white folks, like, leading the charge, like, kind of leading the fight for civil rights. Like, you can look at the way that Stonewall was whitewashed.
Oh, yeah.
Or many, many movements in the South were whitewashed, like, elevating white folks. And you just kind of, I think that it's important to stress that, again, like, the person who is, or the population that is most affected by an issue should be ones leading the organization around it. And the role of an ally is to back them up, is to show up for them, is to elevate their leadership.
That seems like a tough thing for a lot of folks to get their heads around.
Oh, yeah. Everybody likes to talk, but it isn't the place of people who don't come from that community to, I suppose, tell that community how to advance themselves, you know? we as queer people don't want heterosexual people coming into our communities telling us what we have to do to get equal rights and how to live our lives, you know. So having white folks who already take up so much space come into our spaces and our organizational spaces and trying to run anything or talk over anyone or interrupt anyone is just not to be tolerated.
Let's go back and define decolonize.
The definition of decolonization. Well, Adrian, do you want to help me with this?
I think that we are ultimately all colonizers. We're all living on stolen land, stolen from the indigenous people of this nation who are wiped out as a matter of government policy, open government policy. I think that our people were stolen and brought here and forced to build this nation. So I think ultimately, when we're looking at ourselves, we're looking at people who have been put through this process of submitting to capitalism, of erasing cultures, of erasing peoples, and just kind of like perpetuating the system of oppression. And so the process of decolonizing is the process of divesting from the system, of accepting that we have to tear it down together and replace it with something that doesn't exploit anyone.
And also realizing that we are a people who was largely displaced, and we've lost our own original cultures and languages, and were forced to assimilate ourselves with our colonizers. So although there are things that survived or things that we're learning, like by and large, that's all we know. And even if it isn't all you know, it's what you've been taught you need to do to survive. So the first step in fighting the system is freeing your mind from working.
And from exploiting people and from violence.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Like we were talking about before, like returning to the idea of like community-based solutions and like conflict resolution and like calling each other in. I hate that phrase, but like not discarding people when they mess up and like learning to work together instead of just like the system that teaches us that we have to compete with each other and we have to like abuse each other and discard each other.
And
it doesn't
have to
be like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And raising each other up, because colonization couldn't work unless we hated ourselves in some way, right? Anti-blackness is literally in everything. The darker your skin, the harder it is for you. And colorism then runs rampant within, you know, separate ethnic communities. So, it's one big mess. You have to free your mind before you're able to do the work, for sure.
Absolutely.
When we think about allies, what is it that you're looking for? What is it that you're looking for?
I want people to go hard, to show up.
The strong, silent type.
Consistent, awesome people.
Consistent, awesome people who do not 100% operate off of white guilt or internalized misogyny and racism, folks who at least recognize the fact that they need to decolonize and need to process their own guilt, and folks that will speak up, you know, when it counts, and show up when it counts, and protect us, folks that will stand in front of us and, you know, use that good old white privilege for our team.
For the movement.
For the movement.
Subvert it.
Instead of co-opting.
Here's a question that is vague, and you know, I have a lot of ideas about what it can mean. Do you think, do you feel like you're part of a movement to create new definitions of queer or queerness?
New definitions, or I mean,
new embodiments, new identifications. Yeah.
Well, I mean, identity is so personal. You know, I mean, it sucks that it's become this thing that I don't know. that's used to put folks in the very boxes that they're trying not to be inside of. You know, I mean, yeah, I suppose we are part of a movement that is progressive towards folks being able to define their own queerness. I mean, that is liberation, right? Being able to define your own identity and who you are.
Yes, absolutely. It should be like a fill in the blank and not like a drop down box.
Absolutely.
And I think the Black Lives Matter movement is radical acceptance of all Black identities. Like every single Black person, every single Black person
every
on earth.
Single this is black for
every
person.
Single one.
And even if it's a sheet that you can fill out, it's just blank lines. I always like to think of it as you can crumple it up at the end of the day and start over with a new one the next
yes.
day.
Sure. Or not fill it in and leave it blank.
Exactly. Do what you want.
I identify as myself.
We are here on KBOO. This is Preference and Experiment in Queer Radio. This is our inaugural show. Thanks to Boston in the control room for keeping us on track. We played at the break the Stovall Sisters' Hang On In There. That was a selection chosen by DJ Action Slacks. Her next event is Queer Country Junction, August 1st. So look for that. We're here with Adrienne Cabouette and Simone Steffens. We're talking about movement building, Black Lives Matter. We talked a bit about trans inclusion, and I think that there's such great work and so far to go for trans folks.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of safety, access to our shared community resources.
Mm-hmm.
And so far from not having to justify their own lives.
Yeah, well, invisibility at all.
Exactly.
Invisibility at all.
Or stories beyond just their death.
Stories just beyond their death. Stories that don't, I mean, box them in. I guess the running problem, what I keep saying, is that we keep trying to throw people in boxes and using words like orientation or identity or and forcing people to identify. Like, it's not that simple. You know, no one is asking heterosexual white folks, what type of white person are you? You know? Or they're country white folks and they're well-educated white folks. Like, you know, they're not subjected to that. So the more that we subject trans folks to that without letting them share their own story and speak their own identity and their own truth, like, we're not really helping because we don't know. You know, it's not for us to say.
Absolutely. We have to ask them. We have to let them lead their own liberation.
Absolutely.
Can't organize for them.
And support them and give them, you know, what they need.
Show up for them.
Protect them.
And youth as much as anyone.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. More than anyone, because they are the most voiceless, you know? And provide them the resources
learn how to lead?
Yeah, absolutely. And nourish their growth, you know, allow them to grow and explore safely.
I think one of the hardest things I see for queer folks is actually to remember that, in a sense, it's their job to help raise up the next generation. I don't hear that often enough, by far.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think very recently I realized that we're probably, I'm probably gonna have to have kids. Like, the work that we're doing now is not for us. Like, we're not gonna see immediate results. Like, it's gonna be our children. They're going to, like, win this war for us.
Absolutely. So what we teach them, how we feed them, how we aid their growth is everything.
Exactly.
And giving them a safe space and a sounding board to be around other queer folks, especially little queer kids of color, getting to be around queer folks of color is super important. Being able to find solidarity is everything. You know, a lot of I think if there were more outlets for young queer folks of color to express themselves and to be heard and to share their stories and to get that that validation, I just think they would feel better, you know? They wouldn't be so depressed and isolated and, you know? It's hard enough to be a queer kid living in, you know, in a world that is large, by far and large, homophobic, you know? So let alone to maybe live in a household that's like that or a town that's like that or go to a school that's like that. You know, it gets shoved down your throat every day. Having safe space is super important.
And being a queer person of color is an even more isolating experience because spaces that are supposed to be safe are like, safe for queer folks are not safe for you most of the time.
Exactly.
Like pride is a very, very different experience for a person of color. Like it looks like so fun and it's really colorful, but like on the inside there's like N-bombs and like objectification and like groping and like it's just like you feel just like not like a person or not included in this like protected group.
And cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
The cultural appropriation in the queer community. I mean, there are things that people feel are synonymous with drag queens that aren't, that are synonymous with black trans women. There's a whole language that people think that gay folks speak that they don't speak that comes from someplace, you know? And those voices are largely erased and not portrayed.
It's basically just like a minstrel show. It's like blackface.
It is.
They're just like wearing like a costume. It's like Rachel Dolezal's stuff.
Exactly. It doesn't make it better for you to be a drag queen, you know, and performing with a overly stereotypical accent that belonged to black trans women in the 70s. Like, you're still being culturally appropriative. You don't get a pass because you're queer.
So, yeah, creating safe spaces for queer folks of color is a... It's a very, very important thing in our organizing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
To be ourselves and just to be amongst each other.
Mm-hmm. And tell that story.
Yeah. Let's talk about, for a moment, building a movement at a wider level. So nationally, maybe, or in the Pacific Northwest. Hmm. Or Cascadia, if that's your...
No.
Well, the movement is happening. So it's about, I think, one of the themes that Adrian has been telling us about from the Black Lives Matter National Conference is networking and forging those connections and keeping those connections and being there for one another for actions and support and team building. And yeah, there's a movement. You just... We've got one common goal. Everybody work together, and I promise you, we need all of you. You know, and there are different tactics, but...
It's 100% true.
Yeah.
What is it you'd like people to know about your work that they don't? Simone or Adrian?
That we're not just talking about police accountability. That we are talking about a revolutionary movement. That we are not talking about reforming these systems. That we're talking about tearing down these systems. We want to replace them with something that is not inherently unequal and inherently racist. And we want people to understand where these structures came from and why their liberation is tied to ours. That we are all oppressed under a capitalist system.
Mm-hmm.
We want all of us to come together, like all classes of workers, all people oppressed in the system, all marginalized folks, queer folks, homeless folks, like everyone to come together to tear it down.
Absolutely.
Because I think that we can build a better world.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect answer. And one thing I want people to stop doing is responding to anything that we say with hashtag All Lives Matter.
Yeah.
We should be able to talk about the oppression of black people and how our lives do matter without... having a bunch of folks down our jump down our throats and scream racism.
Do you want to say more to that?
Yeah, we should absolutely like allow Black folks to organize for liberation without demanding that they include other groups.
Yes.
I think that asking folks to show up specifically for Black liberation should not be considered a divisive or alienating thing, because we are ultimately human beings. We do not deserve to die under the system, and the things that the system will do to us, they'll eventually do to you too.
And that it's so much deeper than folks know. Like Adrian said, this isn't just about the police. This isn't just about the prison system. This isn't just about food stamps. This isn't just about the media. This is about all of it. It was all built on our backs. And if we don't crush the system, we're going to be stuck here. You know, we're talking revolution, and revolution isn't a dirty word, but it also doesn't mean the weak, sort of watered down definition that we teach kids in school either. And that it's dope to be radical. Be radical. If you are, especially all of you Black queer femme folks and Black queer trans women, take up space. We want you to take up space. You should take up space.
If folks are hearing this and they think this is exactly what I should be doing, where do they go? Do they knock on another word's doors? Do they start somewhere else?
If you are a white person, you should organize white folks against racism and against white supremacy. Form a group. Read a book together. Have discussions
read
about racism.
Read several books together.
When someone's racist in front of you, say, hey, that's... and organize together against it.
And for folks of color who are hearing this and thinking...
For folks of color, organize with us. Organize amongst yourselves. Read together. Do the same thing. Get militant. Do direct actions. Figure out issues are directly affecting your community and do what you can to fight against it.
Reach out. Link up. Call us. Add us on Facebook. Like the page. Send messages. Read the hashtags on Twitter.
Share them. Retweet them. And also, just like talk to your family, talk to your friends, like talk to the people you know, talk to them about important things, talk to them about the things that are happening. Don't pretend that like Black Lives Matter does not exist in the world, that it's happening in a world that you don't exist in. Like this is affecting you too. This is for you too. Ignoring it does not make it go away. We have to talk about it and we have to talk to each other.
And learn your history. Don't wait for them to teach you that in school. There are so many books. This is the age of the World Wide Web. Google your history. Look it up. Learn it. Start to decolonize yourself. And by all means, know that anti-Blackness is a lie. And
it's
you're
not
wonderful.
You.
And you're beautiful. And it's not you. And it's not your fault.
It's not you. It's the system.
All right. This has been pretty wonderful. Last thoughts.
I just want to drive home the point that you have to organize against this, and that everybody has the power to blockade a bank or take a street or like hold a workshop or just like hold like a discussion group or anything, like anything you can think of you can do, and you can contribute to the fight against this. It doesn't necessarily mean like leading a revolution. You can contribute in your own way as long as you're just like talking about this, as long as you're thinking about it.
Absolutely.
Just be aware of what's happening. Learn your history, as someone said. I just want to drive that home. Like, learn, like, because we were intentionally taught lies.
Absolutely.
Learn what really happened. Learn about the resistance that already happened.
And be intentional about your consumerism. Doing things like buying foods from the market that's in your neighborhood, going to the barber that's in your neighborhood, supporting those businesses firsthand. Things of that nature are equally important. You do have to give back.
Build a community outside of the system. Outside of the system, we can take care of ourselves.
Because they tell us that we can't come together, but that's not true. You know? They taught us to hate each other. We weren't built that way.
One of the things we touched on but didn't dig into too deeply, maybe we'll get a chance to do it soon, is we sort of touched on it a few times, capitalism, racism, commodification of people. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be something we'll be talking about more in the future. Again, these upcoming rainbow painted lines for crosswalks, that's the word I can think of ever, in Seattle, you know, it just got me going all day long. thinking about how simple a step that is for a city, a community to, you know, pat itself on the back and give itself a kind of credibility that it hasn't necessarily earned.
There's been too much bloodshed for that. We've been dying in the streets too long for that.
Stop killing us and then paint the crosswalk.
Yeah. You know?
Last thoughts on safe spaces.
Cops do not make safe spaces.
Don't involve the police. They're inherently violent. Be intentional about creating space. Don't tokenize people. Don't expect people to teach you about their oppression.
All right. Thank you so much. We've been here with Simone Steffens and Adrian Cabot. Thank you, each of you, for being here today.
Thank you for having us. Thanks
for having us.
Absolutely. We are Preference, an Experiment in Queer Radio. You can find us on Facebook at Preference Radio. Coming up next is Hard Knock Radio. Thank you so much.
This KBOO program has been possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, from our hands to yours, celebrating 42 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday through Christmas Eve. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Hi, jazz lovers. This is Mike. I wanted to tell you about my new podcast that just went live on KBOO website. It's called Unsung Heroes of Jazz, where every week we'll feature an artist who recorded between the 1940s